Welcome to We're Only Human, a podcast focused on blending research and practical advice to help today's HR, talent, and learning leaders improve business outcomes. Let's welcome your host, Ben Eubanks.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 20 of We're Only Human. This is Ben Eubanks, and I'm so glad to have you here. It is a new year, and I'm really excited about what's in store for the show in the coming months. We're starting the year with a bang by interviewing someone with, you know, it will change how you feel about what your business does. He's an incredible force in nature, and I'm honored to share the microphone with him today. But before I get to the conversation, I want to set the stage a bit. I recently saw a story on LinkedIn about hashtag prisoners job market, and the story was pulled from the New York Times about employers looking for additional sources of talent in what we see as an uncommonly low unemployment rate situation. Unemployment rates are historically low, and people are really scrounging to find people. So the first thing that I thought of was a recent discussion that I had with the HR leader at a firm in Arizona. They actually use female inmates within the prison system to fill critical roles in their call centers. And it's not just cheap labor. That's kind of the cynical view. And it's not just cheap labor for them. It's a way to help these ladies grow their marketable skills. They earn income to help them transition out, and really just gives them this bridge between, you know, people that go into the system and people that return to the system. Honestly, the recidivism rate is pretty high. So what they're trying to do is fix that in some way that's really, really tangible for these people. So they come out of the system not only with connections with a potential job, but actual savings in the bank to help with that transition. And it's just a really, really neat story. Second thing that I thought of, though, was this upcoming interview. One of the audiences that Joe targets with his hiring are people with a record. They need a chance to prove themselves. And we know that if they have some stability in their lives, both in a career and financially, they're less likely to commit another crime, right? But more importantly, these can be people that we overlook in a typical scenario. They might actually be highly qualified and highly motivated, kind of a critical factor today. So I know you'll enjoy the discussion today with Joe DeLoss. He's the head fryer and founder at Hot Chicken Takeover. I hope you take notes because it's going to be a great discussion that touches on areas like hiring, benefits, culture fit, and more. If this show is interesting or helpful to you, would you mind taking a moment to share it with somebody else that might find it helpful? I really appreciate it. Thank you in advance. And now, on with the show. Hey, everybody. This is Ben Eubanks, and I'm really pumped about our guest today. I actually saw him present on stage a few months back at the HCI Innovation at Work event and was, to be honest, prepared to be underwhelmed. I mean, after all, sometimes founders, CEOs have a Me Too story or this thing that doesn't really excite you or get you interested, and my expectations were totally exceeded. Today, I'm actually talking with Joe DeLoss. He's the founder and head fryer at Hot Chicken Takeover. Joe, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So for the audience's benefit, tell us a little bit about your background and what led you to start Hot Chicken Takeover.
Well, so I'll start with what's happening now. Hot Chicken Takeover is a fast casual restaurant chain that's growing in Columbus, Ohio. We're going into our approaching our four-year anniversary, and we have three restaurants now and about 175 team members. But I am not particularly passionate about fried chicken. What brought me to this was, at this point, a 10-year adventure of being really committed to the integration of workforce development and job creation, and am really passionate about building teams and people. And Hot Chicken is the newest version of that, but I've been at it now for quite some time.
Excellent. We know that that's actually the question that occurred to me when I saw you on the roster and as you just before you got started speaking is, why is this guy here? I mean, yeah, you're running a restaurant. I'm sure you're busy. You've got plenty of other things demanding your time. Why in the world would you want to get in front of a bunch of HR leaders and talk about, you know, the things that your business is doing? And it quickly became apparent, again, we'll go through some of the conversation today and touch on some of those points to really hammer that home, but it quickly became apparent to me. And really my philosophy is people want to hear from a business leader that isn't just out there for their own sake, but for the sake of their people and the mission. And again, that's pretty clear if someone spends more than 2 minutes chatting with you, that's exactly how you think about work as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think for context for everybody listening, what makes Hot Chicken Takeover unique and in the past work I've done is that we specifically try to build a supportive environment for men and women that have barriers to employment. And so in our case, that's many men and women that have been affected by a criminal record. We call those alternative resumes in our world. And it's about 70% of our team falls into that category.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of your practices that I really love is the dish tank. So let's say I'm about to be hired as the new HR director. You know, unlike most companies where I'm dumped into a strategy meeting or something else, the first thing that I would do at Hot Chicken Takeover would be, you know, pull on an apron, some gloves, and start washing some dishes. So talk about that practice. What does that reveal about people?
Yeah, what we shared at that conference is that HCT, or Hot Chicken Takeover, has a dish tank culture. And we are an environment really focused around personal development for our team members. And that orientation goes from top to bottom, that we all have to be willing to take ownership and grow and always have the humility to do the most, you know, fundamental jobs in our company. And dishes are what we believe that is. And so no matter who you are, when you're hired onto our team, you'll do a shift or two on the dish tank. And it's become this kind of this icon of our environment. And so everybody has that shared experience, and team members always go back to those new folks on the dishes and give them a pat on the back and tell their dish tank story. And I've done my fair share of them as well.
Yeah, that, I think the origin story, you know, kind of that shared origin for people is a common, powerful bond, you know, a common denominator, whatever you want to call it, that links them back to the culture, the company, just the way we do things around here. And it helps everybody to remember, you know, that you can never stray too far away from that, right? That you mentioned humility. I think that's a key,
yeah,
key point for anybody, regardless of your role and position. And to hear that even you and your status at the top of the food chain, you know, so to speak, for the organization, you still make that a priority because it's that important, it's that critical. Tell me, what's the typical response like? What does someone expect that to be? And then is the actual, you know, experience different than what they expect? Do they come away with kind of a different level of respect for the people that do that? I'm curious.
Yeah. You know, I think for team members that fit on our team, it is a really solidifying experience, and it's not something that's easy to romanticize. Doing dishes at Hot Chicken Takeover, we fry a lot of chicken, so there's grease, and our chicken in particular is hot chicken, which is, so it's not just grease, but really spicy grease, and it's not particularly flattering or enjoyable. And so for somebody to join our team, see the value of that exercise and buy into it, and build camaraderie with others because of it, is really really a clarifying event. And for crew members, in cases where we perhaps may have not vetted the right attribute or characteristic before hiring somebody on, for those crew members that we catch back there, you know, grumpy or frustrated, it's a great indicator that they're not going to last long on the team. And in some cases, we have team members that, you know, we probably didn't vet appropriately on the front end that don't make it through that exercise. And,
Sorry, I was going to say, talk a little bit on that vetting process, because I remember that's one of the things that you touched on in the conversation at the event was around, you know, even asking someone. Again, most of us think about the kinds of people that typically get hired for a fast food type restaurant as, you know, if they can breathe, let's bring them in and get them started and just see what happens, basically.
Yeah.
Let's try to keep them around long enough so that we can find some other sucker to come in here and join them. And that's kind of a harsh view of reality maybe, but one of the things that really blew me away is how you talked about asking about goals and ambitions and things in your new hire process. Can you talk about that part of it and kind of how you vet people?
Yeah. So to provide some additional context to what you're saying, the reality is not many people that work in entry-level jobs, no matter their income, demographic, et cetera, have positive work experiences. They're not particularly dignifying, prideful opportunities. And the best employers out there are the ones that treat every job with respect and integrity. And so for us, we set that example because dishes are not something that often come with a lot of pride, and we can share the position description that affirms exactly why working our dish tank is a fundamental, essential piece of our work environment and why you should be proud to do that job. And so that is much of our strategy. And so we start that in the application process as well. And to ensure that we're hiring people that have that kind of ownership mentality, no matter the job. And part of that process, aside from a couple hoops to make people jump through to make sure that they have an orientation and enthusiasm about work, is that we actually do have people write down the goals they have for their future, short term and long term. And they may have nothing to do with their career at Hot Chicken Takeover, but it does set a precedent that we are interested in the full person and their full ambition. And quite frankly, if somebody doesn't have that ambition and can't fill out a few short-term and long-term goals, it is a big red flag for us, and they generally don't make it through the application process.
Very interesting. Yeah, that, again, I thought that was very unique and different just because the nature of that type of work is typically very transactional and transitional. People,
yep,
you know, get in looking for, this is until I get something else. And the reality is for a lot of the people that you were talking about a minute ago, you know, fair chance type candidates, people that might not have much of a future, they see it as pretty bleak because they haven't had much of an opportunity.
Yeah.
They feel like this employer is really investing in me. They care about me. So I think that's really just a unique kind of position on that. To take that a little further, I want you to talk about another area that you guys focus on that's really unique, respecting the full person, which you said a minute ago. The idea of focusing on benefits that really matter to your people, instead of just saying, hey, you know, everybody offers X, Y, Z, so we're going to throw those out there, and if our employees take it, great. If they, you know, whatever, we don't care. The kind of just philosophy around that, I think, is fundamentally different at Hot Chicken Takeover.
Sure. You know, for a long time, I think the HR industry has appreciated that somebody's personal stability and professional stability are interconnected. And you see that play out most frequently in white-collar work environments or professional work environments where employers are, you know, buying gym memberships and employee assistance programs and counseling opportunities. And for some reason, we have not translated that perspective to entry-level industries. And that's very much what we've done, which is what are the relevant, important, and kind of fundamental types of benefits that can improve somebody's personal stability when they are living through the volatility of poverty or a low-income community. And if you're in our industry, you're either hiring a group of Americans or community members that are actively navigating that volatility every day, or you're hiring high school or college kids that are looking for income as discretionary money, not as survival. And so the benefits package we've evolved are around financial stability and assistance. And so literacy programs, cash advance programs, match savings accounts to support with mental health and recovery and things that might be really relevant, down to things as simple as incentive plans for perfect attendance that buy you a month worth of transportation on a gas card or a bus pass. But these are the types of things that day in and day out help our employees who are a very strong character navigate circumstances not always as strong in their life. And we're really grateful to do it, and it's worked. And we've demonstrated, you know, retention and engagement that are, you know, fundamentally better or different than our industry.
Yeah, well, that's actually funny you mentioned the retention piece, because that's the next question I wanted to ask you around, because,
yeah,
again, it's one of those things. I interviewed someone recently that was in another industry that has high turnover, and the company specifically had some wildly different results from everybody else. And I'm always really curious about those outliers, because when it's an industry kind of thing, it's everybody kind of accepts it and moves on. And when someone kind of bucks the trend and has a different result, the first
right.
one is kind of disbelief, and then like, okay, let's take some notes. What are they doing? Something's working for them. And so I'd love you to talk about what those impressive retention numbers are, and what do you think we talked about some of the things that kind of lead to that, but anything else you think that kind of matters there?
Yeah, for us, so of our annualized turnover right now is around 30%. And so our retention numbers accordingly are around 70%. And we're in an industry that, depending on, you know, the research you reference or the employer you talk to, has anywhere from 75 to 150% turnover a year, generally at a cost of $3,000 to $5,000 per turn of soft and hard costs associated with that. And so we are, you know, 3 to 4X our industry in many ways in terms of productivity and retention. And also acknowledge that of our 30% turnover, some of that turnover, about 5%, we consider not regrettable, indicating that it was positive turnover where we were aware that it was going to happen and supported the employee in the transition. And so that has that runs a much lower cost than the conventional regrettable turnover.
Absolutely lower cost than, hey, somebody didn't show up for their shift today and they didn't show up yesterday. We guess, you know, let's find somebody else.
Right.
It's a different kind of experience. But
yeah,
that blows me away, absolutely, to hear that the numbers are that far off of what the industry considers okay, I guess. It's what's happened
yeah.
in that industry for a long time. And really, that seems like it will be a competitive advantage for you guys, not just in terms of the cost savings and everything else, but from having people that are – you know, there when the customer comes back, like, oh, I remember that person, or, you know, just having a familiar face there, just having that continuity.
Right.
So you're not training new people every other week trying to sort through those things. That seems like it would be a competitive advantage.
It completely is. And, you know, we are a fair chance employer. There's a lot of novelty about the who we hire. Not everybody's interested in the how, and that's what you and I are talking about.
Yeah.
But our business is successful because we make great food and serve it with great hospitality. And our customers aren't coming out of charity or sympathy because we're offering people an opportunity to get back to work. It's not pity chicken. And so that hospitality and food experience that are consistent and rich are a brand differentiator, and they are all tied to having team members that are really engaged in delivering that experience. And in a fast casual or quick service industry, it is hard to differentiate yourself. And our employees are the reason we are, and we've been able to build such brand equity.
Absolutely. So one thing that struck me is, I know you mentioned a minute ago that you guys are closing in on how many employees? I'm sorry, I missed that in my notes.
We're at 175 employees and okay. Closing in on that 200 number.
Okay, and that growth curve has been just incredible over the last couple of years, because you haven't been around for that long.
Yeah.
And a lot of companies, when they have that level of growth, the first thing to go are some of the standards they have. They start bending or letting someone in that they might have, you know, kept out before, but hey, we're pressed for time, or we're having a hard time
yeah.
filling these slots. How do you hold so tightly to those things despite that pressure? Because I know, you know, I've hired people in the past and in fast and slow times, and so I know the pressures of that. How do you hold to those standards in spite of the pressure to maybe let that slip occasionally?
Yeah, well, we've definitely let it slip before, and we've been vulnerable to some of those same consequences. And I think for us, so this year alone, we went from 45 to 175 in about 8 months. And so the majority of our expansion and growth has happened in 2017. And so I think what's been so affirming are the instances where we perhaps didn't listen to our instincts in a hiring decision or push our standards a little bit. What's been very affirming is the consequence of that. And so to see a team member that doesn't contribute the way we need them to, and to be able to tie it back to one of our five values and acknowledge that, well, sure, this team member was not willing to take ownership of any of their actions, or they were a selfish prick and didn't value team the way we need somebody to value team. And so what was great to me is seeing our team and our managers affirm positive and negative decisions based on the values of our company that are not something we print on the back of business cards, but something that we live. And so it was this kind of, we all convinced ourselves that we could slip and push a little bit and then very quickly see the consequence and pull back and retract to this core competency of our value system.
I'm glad you shared that, because you'd expect something like, oh, you just have to hold to that. You can't bend, you can't break. But I think it tells us more. We learn more when we try and then ultimately fail on one of those things. We realize, hey, you know what? It wasn't worth that. It didn't deliver the results we hoped for. It didn't get us over that hump, that challenge. It actually made it harder and more difficult for us because we bent or broke away from those things that have held us for so long. So thanks for sharing that and being willing to be kind of honest about that kind of thing.
Yeah, of course.
So not to take too much more time, I was going to ask you to kind of wrap up. If you could give a piece of advice to an HR or business leader, regardless of their industry, what would it be? Again, we've talked through hiring, we've talked through benefits, we've talked through retention and some other aspects, culture. I mean, there's a lot of things that make your business successful and that are contributing to that amazing, amazing growth curve. What sort of advice would you give to someone if they're saying, hey, you know, the new year's coming, I need some ideas that are going to help carry us through? What would you share with them?
I might repeat myself here a little bit on other things I've said, but
all right.
So the first thing I'd say, just in an acknowledgement of HCT operates as a fair chance employer, is to encourage employers to recognize the difference between circumstance and character. A tremendous amount of low-wage earners and those willing to work entry-level jobs have experienced significant volatility in their lives. Sometimes the symptom of that volatility is a criminal record. Sometimes it's a poor work history or lapses in, you know, large gaps. And what I'd acknowledge is there is a tremendous pool of people and assets that can be truly assets to your company that are often overlooked because people don't associate the consequence of circumstance and volatility. And so I think the moment you start believing that, you will open yourself up to a much larger group of people. And that is one of the biggest problems economically speaking right now is that employers say they can't find the people they need. And I believe are probably being too prohibitive. The second thing that I've learned from our experience is that setting expectations and providing recurring feedback are fundamentally important and often overlooked. You know, of course, everybody says you need performance feedback and that you need clear expectations and job descriptions. But the way we've lived into that is that every 45 to 60 days, every team member is getting really critical and constructive feedback about what it's going to take to move them to the next level. And we very clearly set those expectations and build that roadmap for an employee from day one. But when you're in this entry-level labor game, people are not thinking in six-month or 12-month time frames. They're often thinking in paycheck-to-paycheck time frames because that's the survival mechanism it's taken to keep their family stable amidst a lot of crisis. So you got to deliver feedback that's rich and honest and frequent. And the last thing I'd say is on benefits, and to really challenge yourself to listen and dialogue with your actual workforce about what they're experiencing in life and what would be an improvement. And I guarantee you, if you're looking at paying somebody $10 to $15 an hour, stock options in a 401k are not particularly relevant. But these are the type of benefits we always lean on. And so I think it's important to have that dialogue and understand how can you really enrich somebody's life and stability through employment. And if you make that exchange and bridge that gap, the productivity and loyalty, you know, you will earn can be really disruptive to your business.
That's absolutely awesome. Thank you so much. There's nothing in there that I can debate or dispute, because I would agree with all those points, and they're all great lessons for us. And outside of the common sorts of advice and other things they're going to get this time of year from kind of the generalized tidbits and things like that, those are really specific and really pointed, and any of us could take a look at those internally and come away with a different, more tailored response that matters most to our people. And I think that's really a great point to end on. Thank you so much for joining us today, Joe. It's been wonderful. I've been looking forward to this for a few months, and this has been everything that I'd hoped for and more. For everybody
that's
else.
That's great. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Oh, thank you so much for joining us. For everybody else, I'm going to have a link in the show notes to some additional resources about Hot Chicken Takeover in case you're curious about them, want to learn more about the company. For everybody else listening, thank you for joining us in this episode of We're Only Human. This has been Eubanks, and we'll be back before you know it.
Thank you for listening to We're Only Human. Please take a moment to share this episode with another HR leader who might see it as a valuable resource in their daily work. For more information about the podcast and to see all our show archives, please visit upstarthr.com.